Hey, Prepper Recon fans, welcome to another edition of the PrepperRecon.com podcast. Our mission is to bring you great interviews with preppers from around the globe so you can be better informed and better prepared for everything from a hurricane to the end of the world as we know it. Today we have Zion Prepper, a.k.a. Brian Foster. He holds a master's in chemistry and management. Brian is a U.S. Navy veteran, and he speaks at preparedness seminars around the country. Brian has written the Prepper's Handbook, the Christian Prepper's Handbook, and his latest is Book 1 of the Prepper Survival Guide series. It is an introduction to prepping and a guide to fire. Brian, thanks for taking the time to come on the show today.
Thanks, Mark. It's a pleasure to be here. Good to meet you.
So when did you decide you need to be a prepper?
Well, for us, my wife and I and our family, we're preppers by circumstance. What happened was we lived in New York. We were in upstate New York, Corning, New York specifically, and then 9/11 hit. And I'll never forget that day. I was at work. My wife calls and says, Brian, you need to get to a TV or the internet or a radio to listen what's going on. And she was rather panicked when she was speaking to me. So we had an auditorium there, and I had them turn the TV on, the satellite dish on the auditorium, and I went to the auditorium after the first tower had been hit. The majority of my team was from New York City, so I gathered my entire team and we sat in the auditorium, and the first thing we did was try to contact family members that we knew for a fact were in those towers, and we spent hours and hours doing it, and as you can imagine, we saw the second plane hit. During that time, my wife had went to Walmart, Sam's Club, these different locations, and she was just trying to get the bare essentials, water, bread, rice, flour, beans. By the time she had gotten there, all the shelves were bare. So I come home, my wife and I are talking, and we had two young kids at the time, and we look in the cupboard. We were like any other family. We buy enough food for 1 week. The next week, we go get it. And for the first time in my life, I was scared. You know, there was no food at any of the big retail, big box stores. We had very little food in the cupboard, and we had two small kids. Now, luckily, the next day, things turned around quick, but we didn't know it. And that's when, you know, for the first time in my life, I had that sinking feeling in my stomach. I don't know what's next, and I didn't prepare for anything.
Yeah, that's right. We were all shook up when that happened.
Absolutely.
Now, you, there's a story in your book about you go to the gas station and the guy has locked up the station, but the pumps are still on.
Yeah. Well, that day, when the Twin Towers fell, it was that evening, my wife and I were driving around. We were still looking for food. And we happened to go by a gas station. We were very lucky in the sense that we did not need gas at the time. The gas line was literally probably a half a mile long. Cars lined up to do it. We stood across or parked across the street to watch because it was something we had not seen before. And we were literally right across the street so we could see and hear what was going on. The manager or owner of the shop literally closed the door. I saw him lock it and he walked away. Now, these gas pumps only took credit cards. So when he left, cash was no longer a viable source of tender to get to, or a viable source of money to trade for the gas. So these folks who had cash were trying to convince those with a credit card to exchange it on a one-for-one basis. So, Mark, I'm going to give you $20 cash. You're going to let me use your credit card for $20 in credit so I can get gas. The overwhelming response to the majority of those on the site and the transactions I saw was absolutely no. That was the first time in my life where cash meant nothing. People said, I got a credit card. It has value. Cash doesn't. We're not going to exchange. And literally, there were no fights, but it was very, very tense in the sense that you almost do what you have to do to get that gas. And luckily, it wasn't as, you know, nothing happened.
It's kind of the opposite of what everybody thinks that credit cards are going to be no good when Teotihuacan or the stuff hits the fan, and it was exactly the opposite.
Where yeah,
cash wasn't king, and it wasn't gold or silver or barter. It was a credit card that allowed people to get gas that day.
Yeah, we were lucky in the sense that the credit card had value, and that's what it's all about. Mark, is what do I value? What do I value that you have? So you have something I value, and I'm willing to trade for it. If I don't value it, plastic, money, gold, silver, food, water, heat, shelter. I'm not going to trade it. So my opinion when I saw that day was somebody, or rather a large group of people, put a personal value on plastic, which meant more than the paper money we had.
Yeah. So your first book was The Prepper's Handbook. What prompted you to write that book?
Well, after 9/11, I began literally keeping a journal, and I said, I need to start somewhere. I need to begin to prepare, and I didn't know how to do it. And at that time, the internet had not really, or was not able to provide a lot of information on preppers or what they did or how you prep. And so what I did is I visited different people who in the New York area were homesteaders. They were farmers. And I started to learn with them, and I started to talk with them, and how do they do it? How do you can? How do you garden? How do you seed save? How do you seed bank? How do you do solar? How do you do geothermal? How do you do wind? And I started to learn this slowly, because we didn't have a lot of money, so we had to go real slow on what was doing it. And then I had a buddy, a friend of mine, over one night, and he saw my notes and said, what is that? And I said, oh, it's just something we're using to prepare before something happens. And he says, well, what would you prepare for? And I said, I don't know. That's why I prepare. It could be electromagnetic pulse. It could be a solar flare. It could be a hurricane. It could be a tornado. It could be a financial crisis. It could even be the death of a family member where for some reason, you know, we can't get out and we have to rely on our preps. It could be the loss of a job. And I said, I don't know, but it's for those unknowns in life. And so he said, you know, you really ought to put these out, you know, so people can see this because I haven't seen this before. Well, many years after that, I kept writing and adding to it. And finally, we had talked again after a number of years. And he's like, are you ready to print that? And I said, no, I've written a book. I have no interest in doing it. Well, he helped me through that first book. I did it, and I call it the handbook because it's a general guideline. It's not an all-encompassing manual like some of the others you see out there, but it's to give you a high-level overview of how to prep, what to prep, and just next steps. That was basically the purpose of that book.
And then your second book was The Christian Prepper's Handbook, which sounds similar. What prompted you to write that one?
Well, The Prepper's Handbook, and actually in hindsight, I wish I had written The Christian Prepper's Handbook first and then The Prepper's Handbook. But a lot of my friends, you know, being a Christian in church, the content was appropriate, but some of the examples, they wanted better clarification. They wanted the use of different words. And most importantly, we wanted to see how we could relate this to the Bible. Now, so what I did is The Prepper's Handbook and the Christian Prepper's Handbook basically are probably 90% the same. You know, the contents are the same, but where we spent a lot of time was really trying to understand it and defining what I call a significant life-altering event. And that is different than Teotihuacan, that's different than WROL, that's different than stuff hits the fan. It's different because a significant life-altering event does not have to be the end of the world. And I got an example for you. I have a good prepper friend on YouTube, and he's been a prepper for a long time. His wife died, and it was just him and his wife, and his wife died. And we would talk on YouTube, and he was very, very depressed. And he had told me he lived off his preps for almost 6 months because of the depression he was in. So his preparations were not for a tornado or a hurricane, but they were there to take care of himself during this time of his loss. And so it had a different purpose than anything I ever saw. And I said, it's the end of the world as we know it, but it's a personal end of the world. It's not one that affects you. It's not one that affects me. It affected him only. And so that's where I came up with the phrase significant life-altering event. And I also spent a lot of time, I looked at, you know, reading the Bible again and looking at passages that were applicable to each section of the book and saying, you know, granted they're short, but to me, as much time as I spent, they have more meaning than as if I had written four chapters on food.
Yeah.
So it was really me being able to relate it to my religion, to my church, to my community, and to my peers. And it, even though it's very similar to the Prepper's Handbook, it felt completely different. And it probably took a lot more time to think about than the first book.
Yeah, there's a lot of scripture about that prompts us to prep.
Absolutely.
There's a lot of life-altering events in the Bible, aren't there, to some of the
characters?
There's
many. Yep, absolutely. I agree with that.
And then your new book talks about the five tenets of prepping. Can you give us a real brief overview of what the five tenets of prepping are?
Absolutely. So the five tenets of prepping, to me, are guidelines, whereas we'll get into the ten commandments of prepping, which are the foundation. But the five tenets of prepping, the first is a survival triangle. And I've thought about a lot about that, and I really believe it. Now, everybody knows, just in case as a refresher, it's a triangle. You have three corners. On one corner, you have food, water. Another corner, heat, shelter. And a lot of preppers will have protection on the third corner. I don't. I have self-preservation. And basically what that triangle does is cover up any corner. So let's cover up food and water. If you don't have food and water, it does not matter if you have heat, shelter, or the self-preservation piece. You know, without food and water, you're not going to stay hydrated. You're not going to get the nutrients you need. You're not going to be able to take care of yourself hygienically because you're not going to have that water. So if you cover up heat and shelter, okay, that directly impacts food, water, and self-preservation. So that's what the survival triangle does. In there, I also talk about, as I mentioned, that third corner protection, or many preppers call it protection. I call it self-preservation because as I was thinking through my life's experience, it's more than having guns, ammunition, because you can't eat those. You probably trade them. Bow and arrow, it's more than that. It's being able to mentally and confidently think through a Teotihuacan or WROL or a significant life-altering event. It's mentally being ready. The second piece of that is being physically ready to the best of our capability. Everybody has different capabilities, but we need to make sure that we're at our best because, you know, you're going to see more infection. You're going to see more diseases. You're going to see more physical work. I mean, if there is truly a Teotihuacan, you're going to be doing more physical work than you ever did before.
Yeah, if you're 300 pounds and can't get off the couch.
That's right.
You're not going to do good in that situation, are you?
That's exactly right. In the way I kind of think about it is imagine you're not in the greatest physical health and you have to carry 2 5-gallon buckets of water for a mile just to get it to your family. Okay, it's hard enough doing it when you're in good shape. It's going to be very difficult. So you have to think about, and it's hard for a lot of people. That's why my YouTube channel, my sister is an aerobics instructor and she will customize a low impact routine for anybody who wants help. She's done it for a lot of my YouTube subscribers, and it's been phenomenal. So survival triangle. Tenet number two is physical and mental well-being. We kind of talked about that, but I talk more about it in that tenet. The third tenet is redundancy. I'm a big fan of this. Redundancy costs a little bit more money, but over the amount of time we've been doing it, we're able to do that. So, for example, if you have heat in your house, let's say you have natural gas with a blower. Electricity goes out for 2 weeks. Exactly what happened on the on the East Coast when that nor'eastern hit. 2 weeks people were without heat. What is your backup system? Okay, your blower's not working, power's not coming on. Let's assume you don't have a generator. What is your backup system? Well, us, for example, we have a Big Buddy. It uses propane. It's a different heating mechanism, and it uses a different gas. Okay, if that fails, we have it. It's an old Korean War stove. It's called the Yukon M1950. We just pipe that stove out our window. We can burn wood. So that is the redundancy that I share with a lot of people. You got to have redundancy in everything you do. Fourth tenet is forming a community. And this one's very important because I think Mark, you and I talked earlier about a prepper. Preppers, in my opinion only, is not a homesteader. And it's not a survivalist. As a prepper, I have neighbors. I'm going to talk to you on Skype. My neighbors are 20 feet away on one side, probably 100 feet away on another side, but they're there. I belong to a church, so I have community. I belong to organizations like the Lions Club, so I have, you know, ties to that. So a prepper has to be really a hybrid role in that they have to have 1 foot in the homestead world, 1 foot in the survival world. Homesteading, you might do canning. We mentioned it, gardening. You might be resourceful in learning how to use material in different ways that's never been used. The survivalist mentality may be, you know, how to hunt. If you had to, you could start a fire from primitive materials such as a ferrous rod. So that's really you know, part of that whole community piece is if you're on a bunker, you're not going to do it. I mean, you're by yourself. When you come up, you have nobody to rely on, and you have limited skills. You need skills. You need people who can do armory. You need people who can do electrical engineering or electrical components, people who are mechanically orientated, people who understand the Bible and can share that and continue to give us hope and see the light at the end of the tunnel. That's the community. The fifth tenet kind of goes contradictory to the fourth. It's silence. So I'm an author. I'm on Amazon. I'm all over the web. You type in Zion Prepper. I'm everywhere. So I'm not a silent type because I'm trying to work with, you know, teams and communities to make them understand that a prepper does not necessarily have to be a doomsday prepper. If that's your thing, I understand. That's not my thing because I don't think that's a reality for me. So you have to figure out a way, and especially being a professional, I can let you know, Mark, because you're a professional, that, hey, I'm prepping. You have a skill set I need. You know, what do you say we work together? And that's not easy because I can't just go up to you and say, hey, I'm a prepper. I need you to help me and I'm going to help you.
You got to fill people out a little bit.
You do. And, you know, as a professional, you know, I'm a plant manager. You wonder what, if your boss knew what you did, why, what would they do? Maybe nothing, right? But could they get the wrong impression? You know, so for my first two books, published under my pseudonym, which was Zion Prepper. Zion Prepper is a name taken from where I live. I live in Mount Zion. So I just took the Zion and put it on Prepper, and I had Zion Prepper. And I published that, frankly, so, you know, I might not get in trouble with my employer because I was kind of nervous. And then I said, sure. What I'm doing is nothing more than anybody else does. They just don't realize it. For example, you go to the grocery store, people every week, they get food. They prepare their meals on a weekly basis. That's what I do, but I do it different and on a different scale. So that's the silence part. You have to be really careful who you talk to, who you trust, but that has to be part of forming your community.
Sure. Now, your new book, the main theme of it is fire, and you've got some non-traditional ways of creating a fire in that book. Can you tell us one of those ways without giving away the whole book?
Yeah, one of the ways, I talk about friction fires a lot, where you use friction to create heat. For example, using a ferrous rod and a knife or some kind of bladed object, and that's where you're simply you're taking your tinder bundle, which is material that lights very quick. You're simply adding a spark to it, which gets it burning, smoldering, and then you're going to add kindling to that later. Now, many people will say, okay, you're taking it to an extreme. We'll never have to revert to that. Okay, well, I really pray that that truly is the answer. But what if you have to revert to that? You know, I just keep thinking of the people that got hit by the nor'easter. And I've got prepper friends out there who are ready for it, but they have colleagues and friends who literally stayed in their house for 2 weeks, and had it not been for my prepper colleague supplying heat, supplying some, you know, food, they had nowhere to go. They may have been in trouble, you know, and that fire does many things. It keeps you warm, allows you to cook. If you're out in a survival situation, it can protect you. It can be used for medicinal reasons. For me, primitive fires is very important because there may be a time that I need it after all my prepper supplies have run out. And that's another part people don't think about. Not to diverge real quick, but a very important part is people prep for 6 months. Like, we have a year's supply of food. What do you do if something lasts longer than a year? Okay, all your supplies, your prepper supplies that you prepared are gone in that year. What do you do at that 13th month? Do you have the homesteading skills to continue on because you have no other food available, or you have no other protection, or you have no other water? Whatever it is, it could be completely used up in that period. So that's where the homesteading part of prepper comes in. Anyway, I kind of diverged, but that's one example.
Same point. If you know, matches and lighters are going to run out. So
exactly.
We may go back to primitive skills. So that's very important.
Yeah, and the thing is, you never know. That's just it. You know, if we could predict that, then we could say for sure we don't need it. But as we've seen, you know, unfortunately this week, as you started off the show, at other times, the natural disasters we've had, you know, for right now, you look up the facts, Oklahoma, I probably received 7 earthquake warnings on my droid today, all of them about 3.2 or higher on the Richter scale. That's Mother Nature saying that something's probably going to happen. It's a sign. And it's not one Brian makes up. It's from the U.S. Geological Survey data.
Right.
People should be thinking about that, preparing, because 6 earthquakes, 7 earthquakes in a day at 3.2 or higher, that gets pretty serious.
That's true.
Yep.
Brian, thank you so much for making time to be on the show today. Can you tell our listeners where they can find you? You got a website?
Absolutely, www.zionprepper.com. We're still working on it, but it's coming up to speed pretty quick. And then I'm on YouTube, Zion Prepper, Twitter, Zion Prepper, Facebook, Zion Prepper, Gmail. Send me an email at zionprepper@gmail.com.
Thanks so much, Brian. And we've got links to all of Brian's books at the bottom of the page. Whether you're a well-seasoned prepper or just starting out, you'll learn a lot from all of his books. Thanks for listening to this edition of the Prepper Recon Podcast. Happy prepping.